I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hello, everybody. In case you've forgotten who we are, because it's been so long, my name is Adrian. I am joined once again by Rod, and we are the Wild Wild Podcast. Welcome back. Sorry, it's been ages.
Yes, it has been. It has been far too long. True.
Yes. So, Rod, how have you been?
I have been, regardless of not being podcasting, I have been extraordinarily busy. But with other things, and we should probably let people know that we weren't just slacking off. Part of the reason we were taken out of our regularly scheduled programming for the podcast is partially due to the industrious nature of Mr. Smith. He got us another commentary job in the offing. So,
yeah, I think since we last did an episode of this, we've recorded two commentary tracks.
Have we?
Yeah, I think so. Neither of which have been officially announced.
Yes.
So, I mean, we could say that, I don't know, maybe we have, I can't remember. We definitely did a Spanish one, but we may have mentioned that last time, or maybe we've done that since then. That hasn't been announced yet. We have also done a commentary for an Italian horror film.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think we should say what it is? Because the box set has been announced, it's just that we're not. Our commentary hasn't been announced. What do you think?
Well, that's a good question. Yeah, the box set has been announced, but I don't know that our names have been attached to the extras on it yet.
I mean, what the hell? So we are, we are on the box set for the Houses of Doom release from Cauldron Films. We can just say that. So if you look on the details, there are four films. Two of them have commentaries announced. Two of them are yet to be announced, and one of those is us.
It's true.
So we'll let you decide.
We are not announced. Think it is.
We are unannounced, but we're in that box, which is fun. It's the first 80s sort of horror that I've had to study in any great depth. So yeah, that was a fun one. But anyway, yeah. So we've been busy, and of course, we've also been nominated for an award.
Oh, the Rondo?
Since the last episode, yeah. So we were up for a Rondo. The voting is now closed. So if you voted for us, thank you very much. We're just waiting now to hear who actually won. That was for the commentary for Castle of Blood. Now, I've been nominated for a Rondo once before, but you're nominated pretty much every year, Rod. So this is old hat to you.
Yeah, it's so old hat that I'm pretty convinced that I will not win a thing ever. But
yeah, it's quite cool though. You're there on the list every year for best website.
And I don't really think I deserve it for best website. I'll be honest. I think what I if I'm going to be nominated, it's surely got to be for all the podcasting. But
yeah, although they, I mean, they're no offense to the Rondos, but I think they were set up about 25 years ago and they haven't changed anything since. So I think the website, they don't even have a podcast category, I don't think. They kind of put it under multimedia website rather than a separate podcast category, so that, which is kind of odd. So I think it probably is for the podcast.
Probably so.
You support the podcast with the website, whereas we don't have a website, so maybe that's why. Although we don't do horror either, and Rondo is very much a horror thing. So, but anyway, yes, so that's exciting. We'll hopefully, by the next time we do an episode of this, we can tell you that we didn't win. But the results should, I'm sure the results will be out by the next time we record.
I'm sure they will be, yes.
We are determined to get back to business with this season.
Oh, yeah.
And get some of these episodes out more often than once every 2 months. But is there, I know it's been such a long time, is there anything else that's happened in the last 2 months that you want to tell people about? You've managed to get a few episodes of The Bloody Pit out.
Yeah, I got some out in March. I'm really only going to get the one that's already out in April, because I've when you're working 7 days a week with really no break, trying to fit in all the research and recording time and everything to get another podcast put out has proven too much for me this year. So it'll be the 1st of May before I get anything out new on The Bloody Pit. There are things coming up there where we're going to return to our Universal Horrors of the 1940s with the next couple being extraordinarily obscure films. And I mean obscure to the point of not even had VHS releases in some instances.
Wow.
Yeah. It's... we've hit a weird patch in 1944, and then also be getting back into the Star Trek movies with Star Trek V, the one nobody loves, and
is that the one with the whales?
No. That's the one everybody loves.
Okay.
Five is the one that Shatner made sure he maneuvered himself into having a deal where he got to direct one, and he came up with the story, and let's just say Star Trek V, sometimes referred to as the one you should just skip. So we'll be getting to that in May as well. So those are the things on tap for that. There are other things coming up, including a weird Australian post-apocalyptic film that I've never seen before and I'm kind of excited about, so yeah.
Mm. I was laughing when you said you're on 1944, and I'm just like, I'm wondering which is going to come first, you reaching the end of the decade or you retiring?
well, let's put it this way. Luckily, we don't have to get all the way to the end of the decade. All we have to really reach is roughly 1948 with Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. That's really the end of the road. But... 1944 is turning out to be an incredibly dense year filled with movies. And 45 will be fairly similar when we try to work our way through the remaining Inner Sanctum movies and things like that.
Mm. So. Well, you're doing a great service there. I do enjoy listening to those.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
It's good to shed the light on a largely sort of ignored decade for those films, because generally speaking, the 30s films are thought of as much better.
Well, there will eventually be another book that comes out. One of my podcast buddies, a guy I have on the show occasionally, Mark Clark, who's an author. He's been working on a book focused on the horror films of the 1940s for a few years. I have him on occasionally to talk about something, and I needle him about when the hell he's going to finish the damn thing. But most recently we talked about War of the Worlds and Invaders from Mars, Martian Invasion 1953, as I called the episode. And he's getting closer to the end, but he should have already been done. But that'll be fun when Mark gets that out. That'll be fun.
Having written a book myself that took more than 10 years, I can understand. what he's going through there. So let's get back to what we are here for.
Yes.
We're here to talk about a film that has many titles. Some people know it as Come Ribare la Corona d'Inghilterra.
No, they don't.
Which means how to steal the crown of England. Other people might know it as The Incredible Paris Incident, possibly one of the worst titles.
Yeah.
It could also be known as Superman le Diabolique, or the Diabolical Superman, Argo Man Super Diabolico, the Fantastic Argo Man, or Argo Man the Fantastic Superman. Quite a fun theme, actually. Piero Umiliani, I think. I always pronounce that wrong. Providing the music here. And, always fun when he's involved. But, yeah, so Argo Man, the Fantastic Superman, arguably one of the better known of these films outside of Diabolik, would you say?
Yeah. And I think that maybe because, for some reason or another, it's gotten a DVD release here in the States. It's gotten a fair amount of attention. It's easy enough to spot online. Really not sure how it kind of weaseled its way through the cracks to become something that is a little better known than the average for the films we're covering in this season. But it is. Mm. It's true.
Yeah, and we'll talk a little bit about the release and where when it came out and all that later. But let's talk about the movie. So I'm going to guess that you have seen this before we came to doing this.
Oh, yeah. I initially saw this, man, it has to have been 10 or 15 years ago. And I've returned to it occasionally because while I don't think it's a great film, it is incredibly entertaining and it is truly strange.
Yeah. I think I only really became aware of this when Derek Cook was sort of championing it on Monster Kid Radio, and he briefly, I think he worked for Dorado Films for a little while.
Yep.
And they're the ones who put it out on DVD. And he did, I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but he did an amazing interview with Roger Brown for his podcast, which is well worth seeking out. I think I've tweeted the link to that before, but do check that out because it's a really fascinating insight into what it was like working in this kind of element of the Italian film industry in the 60s. But yeah, so that was when I first became aware of it. And the director is Sergio Grieco, aka Terence Hathaway. And I ended up writing a lot about his films in my PhD because of the Agent 077 films, Mission Bloody Mary. Was it
from
called?
The
Special
Orient
Mission
with Fury? And
yeah, From the Orient with Fury, Special Mission, Lady Chaplin, all of those. So and I've got, you know, very fond of those films. But Sergio Grieco has done loads of movies. Going back, obviously, there's the Sword and Sandal films, and then we've got the Euro Spies. He also did later in the 70s some sort of Poliziotteschi films, which I'm not familiar with any of those.
Oh wow. I mean, you haven't seen some of those?
I've never seen Beast with a Gun.
You need to see Beast with
kicks.
A Gun.
Beast
with a Gun is kind of a must view, especially for someone like you.
Oh, why would you say that?
It's one of the early, it came out on DVD in the early 2000s over here, which is when I caught up with it. And it it won't have the kick that it had for me at the time, because of course in the intervening years, you as well as I have seen many, many more examples of the genre. But Beast with a Gun is a vicious piece of work, and is a bit of a slap in the face a few times. I think you'll get a kick out of it.
Cool. Yeah, I'll have to seek that one out. yeah, it's basically just the Euro spies, really.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, one of these directors who just worked in whichever genre was operating effectively at the time. So he's made a whole bunch of those. And then he passed away quite young, sadly. He was only in his 60s back in 1982.
Yeah. It was weird to find out that he died at the age that he did, because he was so prolific for so long, and it just seems a shame. He's another one of those directors who, when I look back at the work that he produced in the 50s and 60s, all the films that he's listed as director on, I just want to start watching them. the Black Devil, the Pirate of the Black Hawk, all of these titles just immediately call to me, and it's a shame that they're a bit more difficult to get to view than I would like.
Yeah, and some of his sword and sandal films are quite well known, like Blood of the Warriors. I think is particularly that's definitely a one line for. I don't think I've seen it, but I've read that name frequently.
I think I've seen talked about. Slave of Rome. I think I've seen Slave of Rome.
Mm.
I hate to say it, but there's so many alternate titles for many of them that I will end up getting them mixed around.
Yeah,
not because there's so many similar stories playing out in these movies. Never that.
No. One person I did want to talk about in connection with this film is one of the screenwriters, Dino Verde. And he was... I was going to say prolific, but I mean, we've seen writers with a lot more credits than this guy, but he's got nearly 60 credits spanning from the 50s through to the 90s. Lots of comedies, which is what I wanted to mention, because as of course, we should not be surprised to discover that he wrote several films for our favorite comedy duo, Franco and Ciccio.
Yes,
including.
Our favorite.
Due Mafioso contra Gold Ginger, I Due Fili di Ringo, or The Two Brothers of Ringo, all kinds of films for those guys. He also wrote a film that I actually wrote about quite a lot, although it was impossible to get hold of a copy, called The Call Girl Business, about a guy who ends up, it's like a comedy about prostitution, basically. there were several of those in the early 60s, and I wrote a lot about the marketing of that film in the UK, although I couldn't see it, and it's since popped up on YouTube, but only in Italian. But he also wrote a film that I just watched recently called Il Vedovo, or The Widower, for Dino Risi, and I just saw this recently because it's come out in a restoration in a Italian comedy box set, which is one I'm sure you'll be rushing to purchase, Rob.
Oh, certainly, certainly.
And that has been released by Radiance Films here in the UK.
Ah, okay.
And it's very funny. I know that there's this sort of common belief that Italian comedy is something best avoided. But
I don't know if it's a common belief. It is my belief.
Yeah.
But yes, it is firmly my belief.
I think it comes up all the time that it's very much it's only really funny if you're Italian. But I really enjoyed Il Vedovo. It's about this businessman who's very unsuccessful. He's really in debt. He's married to a really rich woman, but she won't lend him any money, and he ends up realizing that the best thing he can do is plan to kill her and inherit her money, and obviously being a comedy, being a comedy, it all goes very wrong.
I've seen a number of giallos that have that same story, plot, only with a very different tint.
Yeah, but this is from 1959, and very funny. So yeah, I think it's fair to say that Argo Man is supposed to be a comedy.
Oh yeah. Least partially. I mean, it's kind of an action comedy, I would call it.
So Dino Verde also wrote another film that we've covered on the podcast, Finalmente la mille una notte. Hang on. Finalmente la mille e una notte. Finally, A Thousand and One Nights, the Antonio Margheriti DiCamerottici comedy with Barbara Boucher and Femi Bernoussi that we watched. And I quite enjoyed that. That was pretty funny. for what it was.
Yeah, I remember not being as disappointed with it as I was with other comedies of that type from Italy. Yeah. So
he wrote that. But he also has worked on giallos, like Death Walks on High Heels. He was involved with that as
well. Yeah, that is really kind of weird as a standout. Mm. It's very different from when you know how much work he did in comedy. He apparently only is responsible for the story, which makes me think that did he write the original story so that it could be a comedy and somebody grabbed it and made it into a crime film? I don't know.
Yeah, because most of his credits are comedies. So who knows? There's also credited on the IMDb is a writer, an American writer, John Davis Hart, who I believe basically worked in dubbing. So the English dub was responsible for that. So it's the same person who wrote English dubs for films like The Great Silence and Kill Baby Kill. And
be pointed out that a number of the actors, not just the lead, Roger Brown, but a number of the actors do seem to be speaking their dialogue in English because the dubbing matches very, very well. So,
And Roger Brown, I mean, we've obviously talked about him before, but he did, he worked in dubbing while he would do dubbing while he was in Italy. Mm-hmm. Anyway, he talks about that in Derek Cook's interview. Of course, we talked about Roger Brown because of his adventures in the jungle.
Yes.
With Samoa. And we pointed out...
Brave man.
Yeah. Is that the one where he turns out to basically just be a really horrible guy?
Yes, and still the hero of the story. Yeah. Yes.
Later on, of course, he is the snuff film fan in Emmanuel in America. So,
Well, I mean, he turns up in a number of things before essentially just stopping doing films until the mid to late 2000s again. Mm-hmm. But I mean, yeah, some of the stuff that he was in during his time in Italy. Are kind of fun. They're the kind of things that I enjoy. I don't know that everyone else does. Mm-hmm. Speaking of, the Eurospy stuff. He did a lot of Eurospy stuff, and then a lot of Peplum in the 60s as well. Those are the golden years for the man. Those are the movies that he's at his full screen power.
Yeah, and he did a Eurospy with Sergio Grieco before this. Anyway, called Password, where he plays a tough CI agent, Agent Gordon. So,
He did Rafifi in Amsterdam with him, as well. Yeah.
There you go. Was there anyone else in the cast that you wanted to mention?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I thought we should talk about Dominique Bechero.
Exactly. She's really impressive in this. There's an argument that I think I could make about. I would prefer the film had been made from her point of view.
Yeah.
Because even though she is the villain of the piece, she's kind of amazing. For lack of a better term, what an incredibly strong and straightforward woman. She's incredibly well actualized here. Mm-hmm. Even the moments before we know who she is, where we've already been introduced to the character before we know that she's the villain of the piece, she's got a twinkle in her eye, and we think she's maybe being taken advantage of, but it turns out she is not. She's a blast. I was utterly charmed by her. I think this may be the first film I ever saw her in, and I always found it to be sad that that although she was in more than 50 movies. I've only seen her in a few things. I saw her. I've seen her in things like Who Saw Her Die and The Iguana with the Tongue of Fire, which is a really weird film. She has a really great role in The Unnaturals, Antonio Margheriti film. She's very good in that.
You and I podcasted about that on The Bloody Pit a couple of years ago. People should check that out.
Recently, finally got to see. Well, recently, I would say, I think it was probably last year. Finally, got to see her in Libido, which is another recommended performance from her, and a pretty good film too.
She's in The Golden Arrow, which again, you and I have also talked about on The Bloody Pit. Everybody should go and check that out.
We've made a lot of time for this lady in our podcasting world, haven't we?
Yeah.
But I really do love her as an actress. I think she, not only is she, of course, obviously a beautiful lady, but she's also very talented on screen. She's got a lot of emotional ground to cover in this, and she's fun. And probably someone might argue that the reason why she's so effective is that she's not on screen nearly as much as our irritating superhero character. Our incredibly arrogant main character, and so maybe that allows for her as a secondary character to shine a bit more brightly. But man, I do really get a kick when she's on screen. I'm really happy because she's just doing a lot of interesting things, not just because she's the villain of the piece.
Yeah, and her character is sort of modeled on, I mean, like a little bit Barbarella, a little bit, what's her name? Modesty Blaze. Like the costumes that she wears are amazing. She just wears these like space age sexy costumes, and it's a different costume every time we see her. And
those costumes are astonishing. Yeah. Some of them, I mean, there's one she wears, we get to see her in a couple of different scenes in, where it's one of those amazing kind of pop art designs where most of it is sheer except for a design element in the front that covers her breasts in a kind of S shaped. It's really amazing. It's one of those things where when you do see it in a film and in recent times, you're taken aback because people just they don't go out of their way to do that kind of thing anymore. Yeah. It's amazing visually.
Yeah, I mean, she wants to become the queen of the world, and I don't think too many people would mind.
I would be fine with it. Frankly. She's fine. She's okay.
Yeah,
I mean, she wants that really giant diamond. But give it to her. I don't care.
So she was French, and this film is a French Italian co-production, which sort of explains why there are scenes in Paris as well, I guess. And she was a bit of a giallo queen with all the colors of the dark, iguana with the tongue of fire. She's in Who Saw Her Die as well, a few things like that. Yeah, I really, the film drags a little bit when she's not in it, I think.
Yeah, it does. And that's one of the reasons why I've always, I will go back and rewatch it every few years. As soon as I'm watching it, I remember why it's not a particular favorite of mine.
Yeah.
I enjoy it, but it really does drag. There's a little too much time spent on scenes that don't need to be in the movie. That, I mean, did we need the scene where we have this weird demonstration about how you can shoot a laser through this giant diamond and it can make a coin kind of rubbery?
Yeah.
I mean, it's pointless. There's no, it's never used again. It's never, there's no point to it at all.
She's using it to sort of animate android robot humans.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't melt when she points it at them. So I don't really know. Yeah. Actually, I think I just said that it was in a French Italian co-production. I think it may have been an Italian Spanish co-production, but it has a very much a sort of Euro pudding cast and mixture of locations. So half the first act is in London, and I was actually in London yesterday walking in some of the same streets where this film is shot by coincidence. And then we also go to Paris. I don't think there are any sequences shot in Spain at all, unless maybe his amazing sort of coastline futuristic bachelor pad. That's definitely not in the UK, whatever that place is. Maybe that was in Spain. It reminded me of the house that they live in. It might be Death Walks on High Heels or Death Walks at Midnight, which is also set in the UK, and they live in this amazing futuristic seaside pad.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's not even real. It might just be a very good matte painting. It's hard to tell.
Well, there's a very obvious, although well done, matte painting in the alternate opening, the opening that is chopped off the Italian version of the film.
Yeah, no, I was going to mention that when we get to the plot. I have this on the Dorado Films DVD, and it's not on that either.
Oh, yeah. Which I've always felt was a bit of a rip. It's like, wait a minute. So I can go online and see this alternate opening, this two plus minute long opening sequence, and it's not part of the film? Y'all didn't find a way to do that?
The version I found on YouTube doesn't have it either. So I need to dig a bit deeper to find it.
Oh, it's out there on YouTube. You can find it, and it's very interesting. I can kind of understand why they thought to chop it off, not just for length, because as we've already spoken about, the film does drag a bit. Mm. But one of the main reasons may be that it really does color our main character as a murderous psycho.
Yeah, it's a supervillain.
Yeah. I mean, there is a part of me that while rewatching the film for a second time a couple of days ago, I kind of almost thought it would be a good idea to construct a question and answer game for you called Argo or Psycho, and just lay out certain things that happen in the movie and say, okay, yeah, is it Argo Man or is it a complete psychotic? You know, things like kidnap a woman in a hovercraft and hold her hostage until she has sex with you. Psycho or Argo? You know,
yeah,
which
now that we're getting ahead of ourselves here, but
yeah,
yes,
sorry.
That whole thing is really weird. And why does she even have a hovercraft other than they clearly had access to a hovercraft?
I don't know, because somebody wanted me to think of that old joke from years ago about hearing Sean Connery as James Bond say the phrase, "My hovercraft is full of eels." That's the only thing I can imagine. I don't know.
It doesn't meet, because it doesn't have any bearing on it. And from what I can tell, they shot the hovercraft sequences in the Isle of Wight. So that is an Isle of Wight based hovercraft that they got access to for a day, I guess. But we're supposed to believe that she's just pulled up by his bachelor pad, which they're never in the same shot. So that's what makes me think the bachelor pad might have been in Spain and the hovercraft is in the Isle of Wight. But yeah,
of film editing.
We're getting ahead of ourselves. We'll get to the plot in a minute. One other cast member I wanted to mention is his butler. Now, this reminded me of Super Argo, who has a kind of Hindu mystic as a sidekick. And there's very much the same sort of thing going on here with his butler, Chandra, who's played by the Spanish actor. Eduardo Fajardo in kind of brown face makeup and to sort of make himself appear a little bit Indian. But he is an actor that we have all seen in tons of stuff, including Django, Murder Mansion. I feel like we've talked about him together before. He's in Exterminators.
Oh, we probably have.
Yeah, he's in Exterminators of the Year 3000. Maybe that's the one.
We talked about him there. I have talked about him a good bit because he was in Cross of the Devil, excellent 1975 film that was written by Paul Naschy.
Yeah.
He was in Devil from Mario Bava.
We talked about him with The Killer Must Kill Again. He's the policeman.
Yes.
In that one.
So he's in Knife of Ice and as you mentioned before, Murder Mansion, which is one of those movies that a lot of people interested in these, you know, in European exploitation have probably stumbled across because it fell into public domain for so long. And now there's a really good Blu-ray out there.
Uh-huh.
But he's usually not always plays bad guys. He's not always the evil governor, you know, trying to kill Thomas Melian, but you know, he's that way pretty frequently.
As the sidekick to Sir Reginald Hoover, is that make him a bad guy as well?
You know, kind of, sort of. I do love the character. I mean, because, okay, so our main character has these weird, he has somehow, in a way that is never explained completely, telekinetic ability telekinetic abilities. He's able to move things with his mind, gives him his incredible powers. And so I'm assuming
He can control inanimate objects as well as people.
Yeah. And I'm assuming that the idea was to connect this to, you know, the Chandra character being somehow he learned to train his mind in India,
which is very much Super Argo versus Diabolicus, I think, where there was a lot of focus on his training and mysticism and stuff,
but they never fully pull the trigger on that. And it's one of those weird things where I've been used to the Indian sidekick as a trope in fantastic fiction, dating all the way back to the pulps, the
yeah.
with the Ram Singh character in the spider pulps back in the 30s. And so seeing one here, I thought, okay, as soon as they introduced that, you know, the crazy telekinetic abilities, I thought, ah, ha, 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 we're going to connect yeah. this to the powers of the mind that one can learn in India. And it's like, well, maybe they were gonna, but...
But he also, it also gives him super strength, of course.
Of course.
But he does have his kryptonite, Rod.
Yes, yes,
what,
which is...
would you like to explain to the listeners what his kryptonite is?
Apparently his kryptonite is a sexual release because if he engages in the physical act of love, notice I'm being very careful here, his powers go away for 6 hours. And there's never any explanation for this.
But to the minute, to the actual
to the minute.
Minute.
And that there's never any explanation for this other than me just hearing General Jack D. Ripper from Dr. Strangelove talking about
vital fluids.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the only thing that really seems to work as far as I can see. I mean, there's a part of me that's like, does this happen to him if he has an accidental nocturnal emission? I mean, help me out here.
Let's not even go there. So let's read the plot. So I've got the book by Roberto Curti here, which has quite a good summary of the plot. But he is also using the print that I watched, so it doesn't have that pre-credit sequence. So maybe as you mentioned it, could you just briefly describe, so what, if we were seeing the full version of the film, what happens in that pre-credit version?
Okay, well, The sequence that isn't a part of the Italian version that begins the film in a longer version starts in China, where Argo Man in full, you know, yellow outfit with red cape.
Yeah, we need to march. We need to talk about that costume in a minute.
We need to. That is the lead. Well, okay, we'll talk about it in a minute. Well, he's being marched out to by soldiers into a field to be executed. But of course, being Argo Man, not that we know anything about him in the first few minutes of this film, but he hypnotizes them, or somehow I would guess he controls them telekinetically and gets them all to kill each other. So we have him standing there like a grinning maniac, telling them to kill each other, and they just gun each other down, and you know, in about, you know, a full minute, just murdering each other constantly. He then jumps in the car of the people who were overseeing this, drives off, and ends up in an office where he's talking to the people who hired him to go and do whatever it was that he was doing. These appear to be Russians.
Oh, okay.
He takes a jeweled box as a souvenir and other valuables in place of ordinary payment. And then we see him put this in his kind of trophy room. So later on, we see the trophy room.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Also in this opening sequence, it appears that he has the Mona Lisa somehow.
Yeah.
don't know why they're bothering with that, but of course we're in fantasy land. And then the credits begin, and the rest of the film plays out as the version that you have seen.
Okay, and the credits are over a lengthy sequence set around Buckingham Palace. So
we know the camera crew went to England.
Yeah, they did some good location stuff here. They really are there, not just second unit. And it reminded me of which one did we just watch, where he's making an escape across London from the Tower of London, and he goes past Buckingham Palace. Which one was that? Was that Super Argo as well?
Oh my goodness, man. It's been a month and a half. I can't remember.
We've definitely seen this location before in one of the other ones. They're already blurring together, and this is only our third episode. So
we've done this to ourselves, though, by having this large gap.
Yeah, sorry, everybody. Yeah, so we're all around Buckingham Palace, and then we cut to the Tower of London, which I was also passing just the other day, and just living a life of London, my London life. And we cut to the interior of the palace to discover that St. Edward's crown has been stolen.
Uh-huh.
And Inspector Lawrence, who's a sort of quite camp, mustachioed Scotland Yard inspector, is scratching his head. He's sure that the only person that could have pulled off such a diabolic crime, I use the word diabolic deliberately, is, of course, Argo Man, who would only, he's the only person who would have the audacity to steal the crown of England. And so Lawrence calls in a consultant, the noted criminologist Sir Reginald Hoover, who is, of course, Argo Man himself.
It's true.
But it turns out that Argo Man didn't do it, because he was too busy in his bachelor pad using his
forcefully
powers.
Seducing.
Yeah, so there's this, he's got like a sort of he's got a very early version of Zoom. He's sitting there in his bachelor pad, checking out all these different women in his address book. And then he zooms one of them who's in the bath, who's like a British member of the aristocracy. And he's like, yeah, I'm going to just call one of these. And Chandra says, but sir, don't forget, you will lose your powers. Oh, nothing's going to happen in 6 hours. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
So he's already got one woman literally on the way.
And no, he's called her.
In the 10 minutes that she says it's going to take her to get there, his mind power sense a sexy woman is passing in a hovercraft. So he forces her hovercraft to land on the beach in the Isle of Wight. And then he uses his mind powers to cause her to fly backwards through the air. And she's wearing an amazing pink sparkly jumpsuit. She reminds me of Penelope Pitstop.
Yes. Yes, you're right. Oh, my
goodness. She's got the same kind of hat thing and everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she flies backwards through the air and lands on the beach in his arms. And he carries her into his bachelor pad and challenges her to a contest to see who can shoot a target the best. And whoever wins, if she wins, she gets a Rolls, I think it was.
And emeralds, an emerald necklace.
And yeah. And if he wins, the special magic...
He gets sex.
The bachelor pad opens, and in they go. And he has got a proper... Like, there's no... Let's not make any bones about it. It's got a sex swing bed.
Yes, it is.
And his bachelor pad is very much based... I'm trying to work out... I don't think this film came out after Diabolic. Diabolic. It came out before.
It was a year before, yeah.
But the design is very familiar. Even some of the shots, there's a great overhead camera looking straight down onto their bed shot, mm-hmm. that is a very famous shot from Diabolic, which makes me wonder if Barber saw this film.
I don't know.
The set design and some of the shots are quite similar. I mean, she's dressed, anyway. It very much reminded me of Diabolic. And so, yeah, so he obviously wins the contest, and these doors open to reveal the sex room, basically. He's like, you know, he's like, what's his name, Christian Grey, with his secret sex room at the back of the office.
Oh, God.
So, yeah, so in they go, and she seems totally up for that. And then we cut to them smoking, which is the international language of what they've just been up to.
It's the international symbol of completion.
Yeah. But so he's lost his powers, and then she proves that actually she's really good at archery, and she fires the arrow and hits the target. But then she says she doesn't want the car anyway because she's already got one. So, but of course, what we don't know here until later on is that this is, in fact, Jenna Bell, a.k.a. Regina, who is the queen of the world. And she, the crown is returned to Inspector Lawrence in a gift package with a note saying that she is the queen of the world. Although when I read it, it didn't look like world to me. It looked like a spelling mistake. It looked like worlds.
I think they're missing, it's missing a D.
It's missing
maybe?
A D, isn't it? It's not, yeah. Just me. It is missing a D. They keep referring to her as the queen of the world, but I read it as queen of the worlds. So it was confusing. She's returned it.
Yeah.
She's only stolen the crown just to prove how good she is. She's actually asking for a gigantic diamond that has was formed at the base of a nuclear explosion. Is that right?
Yes, something very odd about how this perfectly faceted piece of glass was formed, yes.
And it's being held in a secret vault in Paris. And it has these, if you shine light into it, it bends coins in half.
But also has other powers. Like I say, they go out of their way to demonstrate that this gem has the property of reflecting any sort of light and destroying molecular cohesion, rendering, I guess, any material kind of rubbery. Yeah. But it's never used again.
No, unless she's planning to hold the world hostage, that if they don't let her be the queen, she's just going to make everything bendy.
Well, what I kept waiting for them to do is to find a way to employ this ability to, like, make walls or vault doors or something, you know, rubbery, so that they could just pull them down. But, you know, that's not the direction they go.
Because Sir Reginald Hoover is on the case, and the girl that he was waiting for to come round, obviously, who said, I'll be there in 10 minutes.
Samantha took a little bit longer to get there than you would
think. Well, I don't know. I think it only either that or his date with Jezebel was under 10 minutes. And then, because she turns
which does not speak well of Sir Reginald.
I know. So. 10 minutes and you lose your powers for 6 hours. I mean, I don't know if that's really worth it. But anyway, he is employed to go to Paris to go and sort of check in on the diamond and check out what's going on. And there is a great sequence where they go up the Eiffel Tower to look around and work out where she might be going. Because he apparently knew the whole time that she was Jennebel, this random woman who turned up in a hovercraft. Yes. I think he gave her something that is radioactive that he can then follow.
A cigarette. She smoked one of his cigarettes.
Oh, yeah.
His radioactive cigarettes. I immediately have to ask, what?
I know. So, she could become queen of the world, but then she's going to die of some kind of horrible cancer.
Lungs or something.
That's it. She spoke. So that means he knew that she was the evil. But we don't know how he knew, unless it's his special mind powers.
Well, that's just it. Did he know, or does he just contaminate the lungs of all his one night stands?
Of all his women. He likes to, he likes to trace all of the women in his life with radioactive cigarettes. So they go up the Eiffel Tower to try and track where she is. I was expecting at some point there would have been a great sequence where they bend the Eiffel Tower in half with this diamond. That would have been a cool demonstration of its powers.
Yeah, I mean, there are all kinds of possible things that rushed through my head when they demonstrate that the first time I saw this film. And it's like, you know what you get to see about that? Nothing. Not a thing. Which is weird. So we're led to believe that the only thing she's using it for is to alter the faces of these androids so that she can substitute the controlled androids for world leaders.
We're getting into kind of Dr. Goldfoot and the Bikini Machine territory.
Yep.
But the other way round, where she's the beautiful woman and she's creating replicas of politicians who she can control. So we get into some scenes where all of that stuff is going on. And Argaman has to find her really cool underground secret lair that's, again, very pop art and very 60s. I mean, the design.
Love the design.
Is great.
Yeah.
This film looks great. I would love to see a restoration. Apparently, Dorado were planning a Kickstarter to do a proper restoration from the negative, but then it never happened. So their DVD is just print, basically.
Yeah, it's a real shame. There are apparently more problems with Dorado than meets the eye, which is a real shame.
Yes, I'm sure some listeners are still waiting for their Jess Franco box set from Dorado from like 10 years ago.
Oh, I got that's the thing is I bought the there are two deep Blu-ray releases. One's a couple of spaghetti westerns. Both of which look, to be blunt, like crap. And I did get their Jess Franco release as well. And it's slightly better, but still evidence of not really caring.
Didn't you have to wait years to get it?
Oh, yeah. It took forever. Yeah. And then when it finally showed up, I excitedly threw it in the player. And I'm like, man, what is it? Wasn't a real shock when Nerado, you know, once again retreated from public view and stopped releasing things. It wasn't a real surprise.
It's a shame because they obviously had good intentions. I mean, they were giving us some great stuff that nobody else was giving us.
Well, I think they wanted to make money, but they weren't willing to spend money to do so. So.
But anyway, but the reason I mention it is because clearly that means that there is a negative of this film in an Italian lab somewhere. Mm-hmm. And so maybe there's hope, because I forgot to mention at the beginning, but the company Terrorvision did just announce a Blu-ray full restoration of Satanic.
I know.
Which we have on our list to do in a couple of films' time. So maybe if that's successful, they might drag the negative of this film out into the light of day, because this is a film that would definitely benefit from a HD restoration, because it does look fab.
Mm-hmm. And I would love to see like the two Super Argo films released as a double feature special edition. That would be a perfect kind of idea.
I mean, we could talk a little bit. We don't need to talk about the plot anymore, because I mean, obviously, so Argo Man does eventually, he loses his powers for 6 hours, and there's a great scene where he's having to break into this van, this truck, where the bad guys are stealing loads of money from a bank. Mm-hmm. But his powers, he's still got 10 minutes to go. So he's hiding. And then they find him and they start beating him up and he can't fight them. But then, like, the alarm goes off and then, bing, he's able to kick the crap out of them, which is really fun. And he really does. He throws them out of the roof and out of the sides of the van, and yeah, it's very funny.
I have a question for you. He also is just automatically in his Super Argo bright yellow red cape outfit as well.
So,
which points toward some strange type of, you know, mystic magic.
Well, yes. So I wanted to talk about the costume. It's not under his clothes.
No, it just suddenly is there.
So does it mean is that just an extension of his mind powers?
I don't know. And here's another question for you that the film doesn't seem to be even remotely interested in answering. No. Who does know that Sir Reginald is Argo Man and who does not? Clearly the police don't, because to a large extent the cops think of Argo Man as a criminal, which, by the way, Argo or Psycho, I would like to point out, is another way to think of this. But Samantha clearly knows who he is.
Yeah,
she's a full participant in helping him once they're in Paris, getting things done.
She helps distract the bad guys by just stripping down to her undies.
So she knows full well that Sir Reginald is Argo Man, but who else knows? Because there seems to be a kind of sloppiness about
So the butler knows.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Jennabel has worked it out. She knows. Mm-hmm. And maybe maybe he talks in his sleep. I don't know.
I don't know.
The costume is hilarious. It's almost, I mean, I think Roberto Curti talks about how it's kind of a comedy costume.
In a way,
The mask is weird. He's got kind of Cyclops from X-Men style eyes. He's got a yellow costume with black briefs and then a sort of red cape. I mean, it's not a great look for any superhero.
It's not a costume built for skulking. This is not darker colors blending into shadows
stuff. It's bright yellow. The poster, though, I wanted to mention the poster. It's a very sort of Frank Frazetta style artwork.
Yes.
Where he's
amazing
huge,
poster art.
Yeah, really muscular. And then a kind of Barbarella style girl stretched out in a, basically in a Princess Leia bikini, holding a
with a gun of some sort.
Yeah, she's not in the movie, but
well, I mean, I think she's supposed to kind of represent the Samantha character.
Oh,
but
maybe
I don't know.
But it is very Frank Frazetta. Is that right, Frank Frazetta? Am I getting
Frank
that right?
Frank Frazetta? Yeah.
Yeah, it looks like.
But I mean, I don't know who the artist was. I'm sure it would be easy enough to find out.
Yeah,
who
it's
did
the
that
Italian.
Painting.
That is the Italian artwork, and it is great. But when you actually see him, so there he's really muscular and powerful, and then you actually see him in the costume, and it's like he's just bought it from a joke shop. It's not great. It's pretty funny. But yes, where it comes from, who knows? But he has all kinds of adventures. Once he gets into her lair, he has to fight a robot at one point, which I don't really know why that's there, other than maybe they just had a robot lying around.
I don't know either. It's a little odd.
Yeah. But it's really fun. It is fun. It drags
a
little
bit. It is a
fun film,
if you can get past the boring parts.
Yeah, it drags a bit, but it's quite funny. The sort of relationship that he has with Scotland Yard is quite amusing. And
well, see, once again, this movie, it's strange to bring this up, but it does once again remind me of the pulp character, the spider, in the spider pulps. The character of the spider, his alter ego, his actual self, is someone who's considered a brilliant criminologist who is occasionally brought in, actually, considering the pulps, regularly brought in by the police to help them investigate things, but he's also, you know, secretly the spider. And so that's exactly what's going on here, but of course this is being played kind of very broadly for comedy, so we get the sense that the inspector, Inspector Lawrence, is a little too dim to ever figure this out. Yeah. And so, you know, in the spider pulps, the idea was that eventually the man that he works most commonly with has started to figure it out, or maybe has figured it out, but is kind of keeping his mouth shut because they work well as a team. But this is the same thing here. And once again, I seeing multiple things in this that seem drawn from the inspiration possibly of the spider. I mean, there are probably other things that filtered down into something else that an Italian scriptwriter might have noticed as well, instead of just the spider stuff. But it's very, very one-to-one in, you know, in at least three different ways, and it makes me think, maybe it's an inspiration, but...
Oh, maybe, yeah. Who knows? I mean, it's clearly sort of a parody of things, because he's basically very much like a diabolic character, mm-hmm. in that he's stealing stuff just for fun. He doesn't need any of this stuff, but he steals it anyway. And he's got his pop art lair and all that sort of stuff. So he's a bit sort of diabolic, but then, yeah, with a secret identity and sort of having to be the hero, which is very much not what diabolic would do. So he's like a combination of Superargo and diabolic, which, you know, and who doesn't want that? I mean, that's great fun, right? So the film, I was trying to find out about its distribution, and it clearly was distributed in Italy at the time, but it had a rather spotty distribution outside, even though it's got an American cast and it's got an English dub. From what I can tell, the distribution was weird. So I looked it up, and it didn't appear to get released over here in the UK. But it was picked up by a British distributor, Kenneth Rive, who ran a company called Gala. And I don't want to keep mentioning my PhD all the time, but just by coincidence, I think it's because we're doing all the stuff that I studied. So I wrote a lot about Kenneth Rive and his company Gala, and they specialized in European cinema. But it was a really interesting combination of art house stuff like Truffaut and Eric Rohmer and Louis Malle, but then you've also got the Danish Dentist on the Job, for example, kind of, you know, Swedish sex comedies and Danish sex comedies and so on. He picked this up in 1973. There's an ad in Variety where they're celebrating 25 years of their company Gala, and one of the films mentioned in this ad is Argo Man, the Fantastic Superman. So this is 6 years after its release. But also, just out of interest, as well, in the ad are films like Mafia versus Goldfinger, which was the Franco Ciccio film from about 10 years earlier. Mm-hmm. The Crimes of the Black Cat, which is Giallo. So he just picks up a whole load of cheap Italian films, basically. Lizard in a Woman's Skin is in there. So, not entirely sure why it took so many years to be picked up, but that was in 73. And then in 1978, there is an ad in Variety again that says, Roger Brown is Argo Man, the Fantastic Superman, ready for delivery. And it's being advertised again for sale by the Italian distribution company Feeder Export. So it seems like Gala picked it up but then dropped it again. And so they were trying to sell it again in 1978. So this is 11 years after its release.
And my guess would be about, you know, why it didn't show up until the 70s, you know, in different countries may have been the fact that this is, you know, very much a James Bond inspired thing. I mean, this is a slightly comedic, you know, outside of Italy, I think this would have been seen primarily as more connected to the Eurospy genre than to anything else that is kind of common enough for a broad population to understand immediately. And so that genre by 67 was burning itself out really quickly. Mm. And so there may have been a refusal to pick it up for foreign distribution in a few countries until, you know, maybe years later when the perception may have been that, well, it's different enough now and there aren't 10 other films currently in theaters that are, similar to it. So
they're going to struggle in 1978 to sell a film like this when you've got Superman just coming around the corner.
Oh, I know. And that probably is exactly the reason why they were attempting to sell it again with the idea of, you know, once again, riding coattails of something larger and pretending that it's a recent thing.
Yeah. So it didn't appear to get much of a distribution in the West. However, I did find a review in the South China Morning Post. So this film was... Yeah.
The South China Morning Post.
Yep.
I am impressed.
In 1969, Argo Man was in cinemas in Hong Kong.
When?
So, in 1969.
Okay, good.
So that would have been probably its English dub. But they didn't like it. So the reviewer, the title is of this article is, Here's a Film to Escape From. And I just want to read some of it to you because it's really funny. Where do the Italians find an audience for these sort of things? Certainly, the children wouldn't be interested in a hero who spends 39.63% of his time messing around with girls and mushy stuff like that. And the rest of it is far too silly to attract the attention of any adults. Somebody must go out to see the darn things, though, or we'd never have had Danger Diabolic, Dorelic, or the Three Fantastic Supermen. And wouldn't that have been a tremendous loss? Now, when I read that list, I thought, Dorelic? What the hell is Dorelic? I'd never heard of Dorelic. Have you heard of Dorelic? I had to look it up.
Dorelic? What? How is that even spelled?
Dorelik. So I looked it up, and it's a spoof directed by Steno, who did a lot of Italian comedies, our favourites, also known as Arriva Dorelic, and it is a spoof of Diabolik, but it came out in 1967, and it stars Margaret Lee, among other people, and the Italian comedian Johnny Dorelli, hence the name Dorelic. Huh. But I'd never heard of it. But it's got Terry Thomas in it, who was also in the actual Diabolik, but this came out before Diabolik. So I was completely unaware of Dorelic, and I've looked it up, and it looks really fun. There's a good clip on YouTube of Margaret Lee singing a song. I might have to add that to our list.
I would be curious to see that one. Depending on how difficult it would be to see.
Yeah, there's a great clip, if you look it up, of Margaret Lee singing a song called Crashishi Patapum.
are you pronouncing that the same way it is in the song?
I think so, because I listened to it, and that's how she sings it. So, yeah, that could be fun. But anyway, I'd never heard of that, so thank you to the South China Post. So they go on to say, oh, well, it does fill in almost 2 hours of time. That somebody might otherwise spend studying surgery or raising money for Biafran relief. And after all, that's what people go to the cinema for, a couple of hours of escape. Although, for my own part, this is the sort of film I try to escape from rather than to. One more paragraph. The superhero in question has all the standard routines to go through: disarming killer robots, coping with the hopelessly inadequate police, maintaining his secret identity, recapturing the latest scientific marvel with which the villain, naturally enough, intends to rule the world, and generally following along in the tradition set many years ago by Superman and Captain Marvel. If I could just say Shazam and take over the Italian film industry. So I think that is a very well-written review, even though they didn't like it.
I'm kind of impressed.
Yeah.
Even as he runs it down. And
yeah.
Of course, we can't claim to have not done so ourselves here today.
No.
Obviously, we enjoy it more than he did. So.
Yeah. There you go. So that is Argoman, a sort of cult favorite, which has a lot going for it, even if... Yeah, I mean, obviously, the problem with all of these films is that they're not diabolic. The comparison is always going to be made, and diabolic is always going to win.
I mean, there is this knowledge amongst fans of these things that is the penultimate. I mean, that's the pinnacle. That's the top. That's the one. You know, and it's almost sad that that's the one that is most commonly known, and it is. There's nothing better, and there's nothing even really comparable in its qualities. There are some that I think I enjoy almost as much, but when you start exploring the genre, you have already seen the best one.
That's the problem.
That's the problem. It's like, you know, there is the as long as you dial your expectations down, you can have a really good time exploring the genre, as you and I are. But if you're walking in the door with Danger Diabolik, Bava's masterwork, on your mind, everything else will seem rather pale. So it's a bit of a shame.
Yes, but still very much worth checking out. Mm-hmm. Because we've had some feedback in the last since our last episode, so I just wanted to mention we had an email from Kurt. Hi, Kurt, and he says, "Dear Adrian Rod, I had no idea until you mentioned it that there are three newer Diabolik films. Now I want to check them out. The preview clips I've seen look interesting, if a little desaturated for my taste, especially compared to the 1968 film. But progress marches on. It kind of makes me wonder if the other countries do remakes, reboots, etc. for the same reasons and with a similar approach as Hollywood takes. Were the Diabolik comics rebooted too, if they ever stopped being made?" Well, Kurt, so Diabolik has never stopped. They still issue. There's a new issue pretty much every week, I think. If you go to any news,
it's still weekly.
Yeah. If you go to newsstands, I'm pretty sure it's weekly. If you go to newsstands in Italy, they've always got the latest issue. So it's been going for more than 60 years now, and you can follow them on Facebook, and they post out the latest issue. I'm pretty sure it's weekly. Yeah. So.
Wow.
Yeah, quite something. And there have been a few published in English, but they are very collectible and quite expensive if you wanted to try and get hold of those.
Yeah, they're ridiculously pricey.
Yeah, so they haven't published any in English for a long time, which is a shame, because it would be fun to even, you know, if somebody you'd think some enterprising publisher would pick those up in America or over here
and do a
translation. Because some of the other Fumetti have, I've got a translation of Sadistic, which is in English, that was put out in America. So, but yeah, no, not, it's quite hard to get hold of. I've bought several Diabolik. Every time I go to Italy, I buy another one, and I just look at the pictures and read the words that I recognize, but my Italian is still not good enough to be able to just read it all the way through. The new films are good. I've seen the first two. The third film, Diabolik Kisei, just came out earlier this year. But really frustratingly, they've not included English subtitles on the Blu-ray.
Well, that was going to be my next question.
Yeah.
Because I still have not been able to see any of them.
So the first two films have got English subtitles, and I've got both of them, and they're very good. They're very good translations of the comic. They're not trying to replicate Bava. They're very much just adapting the comics. But for some inexplicable reason, the third film has not got English subtitles, so I can't complete the trilogy, which is a real shame. But I've heard a rumour, and I haven't seen this confirmed yet, that Kino in America have picked up the rights. So that that might be why they've not included English subtitles in the last one.
Could be.
So fingers crossed, because the first one came out, I think, 2021. And then the second one came out 22. And then the third film came out in the cinemas in Italy last year. And it's just come out on Blu-ray earlier this year. So maybe the trilogy will get a more English-friendly package in America. So, yeah. But it's disappointing because I enjoyed the first two and now I can't watch the last one until I really improve my Italian. But, yeah, so worth checking out. You can buy it from Italian Amazon or just wait until they come out. But, yeah, the comics, again, you can... Yeah, the artwork is good. So if you're ever in Italy, you can pick them up very cheap. And when I was in Italy a couple of years ago, I went to an art gallery in Turin that had a Diabolik exhibition full of fantastic Diabolik artwork. I mean, Italy, it's just so popular.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to kind of just underestimate how popular it still is. And the artwork is everywhere. And you see Diabolik graffiti. The image, I've still got it on my Twitter picture, is some Diabolik graffiti that I spotted quite near to Luigi Cozzi's shop, actually. I just saw it on the wall as I was walking past, so I took a picture, and I've still got that as my Twitter image. It's just everywhere, in Rome especially, but also, like I said, there's a gallery in Turin. So Diabolik is hugely popular, as are just the comics, other fumetti. It's very much a going thing, and it's the fumetti in Italy is really not for kids. So that's why you get all this kind of stuff that we're talking about. And whilst there was no fumetti itself for Argo Man, some of the other films that we're going to do come from comics. Mm-hmm.
And this film is very much in that vein. I mean, yeah. this is going to be the one with probably the most comedy, I would think.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so other ones that we're going to get to were comics. Obviously, Criminal was a comic. We're going to do Satanic, which was also a comic as well, and a few others. But yeah, thanks for your message, Kurt. We also had an email from Michael, who said the new comic series is off to a great start. Thank you. Sorry, we then stopped for 2 months. Thanks for showing these films some respect. I'm both proud and somewhat embarrassed that I've seen most of these titles. None seem to be streaming anywhere, yep, but I've seen poor copies on YouTube, and that speaks volumes about how little anyone seems to care about these films or their copyrights. Yeah, I mean, we can say that. We can say that about half the films we've done on the podcast, probably.
True.
He mentions that he likes Criminal and Il Marchio di Criminal, and Satanic is very good. Which we're going to get to eventually. I'm also getting the Argo films mixed up. Roger Brown's Argo Man was very good. He then says, I'm not quite sure, Michael, where you're getting this from. I know you guys aren't big fans of Eurospy films.
That is definitely not true.
Yeah. Perhaps you could feature more Roger Brown films. I mean, I love Eurospy. We haven't planned a Eurospy season yet.
But we will.
Yeah,
yes.
We'll get to that. And obviously Roger Brown, as we said, has popped up before. But yeah, we love Eurospy. And these films do, especially this one, I would say, have a lot of Eurospy elements, definitely. So yeah, no, Eurospy all the way. One more message. I just have to grab my phone because we did have a message on Instagram. So if you want to message us, you can get in touch with us on email, wildwildpodcast@gmail.com. Or you can find us on Instagram. Just search for Wild Wild Podcast. And we had a message from James. Thank you, James, who voted for us. He just wanted to mention that he voted for us in the Rondos. So thanks, James,
thank you.
For that.
Thank you.
And then Mark
got in touch. We know we got at least one vote.
Mark got in touch to mention Goldface, the Fantastic Superman, which is available in widescreen on YouTube. And Goldface is another kind of masked wrestler type which I haven't seen Goldface, and I don't have it on the list. The trouble is I'm trying to keep these seasons to 10 films.
Right.
But
obvious that this one's going to stretch outside those bounds already.
It could if we tried to cover all of them, because there are some good ones.
We've already cheated the first two episodes. So.
Were doubles, yeah. So he's mentioned Goldface, which I'm not familiar with, so I'll have to have a look at that one. He also mentions it would be good to cover Beto Albertini, who had a long, diverse career. Now, I'm pretty sure we have done Beto Albertini. That name is familiar to me.
It's not familiar to me.
I'm looking him up right now. Yes, Beto Albertini was a cinematographer, but he also directed some of the... He's done, all the usual films. Toto, Sword and Sandal...
Okay.
Our favourites, Franco Ciccio, a whole bunch of those. He did, a few different films. I thought we'd covered him before in... The name is familiar because he did Superman Against the Orient, which I might have on our list. He did another film. He did Three Supermen in Tokyo, Goldface, but he also directed the first Black Emmanuel film, which I think is why the name rings a bell, because I've got that box set hanging around. Oh, and of course, wait a minute. What am I saying? Of course, Beto Albertini. He did Giochi Erotici nella Terza Galassia, or Erotic Games in the Third Galaxy, a.k.a. Escape from Galaxy 3.
Oh, that's the person
that's the guy.
Yes.
I think, for me, that episode is still a highlight of the podcast so far.
Yes, for you.
I loved that film so much. I loved that film so much that I went to Sherry Buchanan's house and rang her doorbell.
You stalked the actress.
I wrote her a letter, and then she messaged me on WhatsApp. So, that's a great film. Of course, yes, but Beto Albertini, yes, I knew it was familiar. A very varied and interesting career. But, there are so many rabbit holes that you can go down.
This is true.
With this stuff. But, yeah, thanks, Mark.
Well, with Mr. Albertini, I did immediately spot one of his films. It's a Brad Harris film called Zambo, King of the Jungle. Which I immediately thought, hey, I'd watch that.
Yeah, the add to cart. Oh, dear. Man, we could do this podcast for 100 years.
Oh, of course. Easily, still, without even straining ourselves.
Yeah, still never run out. One thing that we really need to end now, but one thing that does concern me with this podcast, and I think it's just a problem with the Italian film industry, and perhaps most film industries, is all of our films are written and directed by men. And I'm very aware of this, that this is a very male-heavy podcast. Two guys talking about films directed by men. And if anyone can, this is just a general call out, if anyone can recommend female directed genre films in Italy, I would love to watch them. Because I've been doing some searching and there's really not a lot out there.
I don't want to sound culturally insensitive, but there's a little bit of gender disparity because we're talking about Italy in a certain period of time.
Sure. And this is just a problem with, the patriarchy in general, I guess.
Well, I mean, it's just these were not, it was not considered a job.
Just didn't happen.
For ladies.
Yeah.
So
it just didn't happen. Some of the Black Emmanuel films were those of a woman writing those whose name escapes me temporarily.
Okay.
But yes, if anyone has any, could anyone like point me in the direction of female directed Italian genre films, I would love to do that at some point, because I'm just constantly aware that who's the director of this one? It's another white guy. But anyway, not that I'm trying to, turn this into something it isn't, but it would be nice to maybe, I did think about Edwidge Fenech. I often think about Edwidge Fenech. But I did think about Edwidge Fenech.
I'm sorry. I do as well, but I don't admit it publicly. So
she's a producer. She hasn't directed, I don't think, but she did become a producer. So there are some examples which we could perhaps pick up on at a later date. But anyway, that's just a conversation for another time. If anybody has any suggestions, I'd love to hear them. But hey, this is running long, so we'd better say thank you, everybody, for listening. Next, the plan is to do actually the three Fantastic Supermen. So there you go. And also, I did put out a short episode last week where I talked about the new Luigi Cozzi screenplay, Luna Diamond and the Midas Star. So that's quite fun. If you haven't heard that, that's me just describing his new screenplay for an imagined, just in a world where Luigi Cozzi gets the funding to make a follow-up to Star Crash, it would be about another space pirate called Luna Diamond.
Oh my goodness. Well, you know what I just discovered? I can't believe this is true. The streaming service Tubi actually has Zambo King of the Jungle for viewing. I cannot believe this.
Holy that's the rest of your day sorted out.
I think my afternoon is gone. Yeah, I think I know where I'm going. So.
Okay, well, thank you, everybody, for listening. We will be back soon with not one Superman, but three.
Yes, so, yes, indeed.
One film, three Superman. I mean,
can the world survive?
Yeah, what could go wrong? Okay, thanks, everybody, for listening, and we will be back soon. Bye for now.
Bye, everyone.
Deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.